Pitch to Bellinger. He swings and he hits a high fly ball right center field. This ball's gone!
Now a 3-1 for Acuna. Swinging a high fly ball! Deep to left field! Way, way back! It's gone!
Live from the Auto Farm Studios, it's Drive Time Sports on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
Back on Drive Time Sports, live from the Auto Farm Studios, 107.3 FM and 750 AM. A lot of baseball talk going on right now. Of course, we have the draft going on last night, round one and round A. Always interesting. And of course, we have the idea of will there or won't there be baseball? We're going to take a step away from that kind of talk, and we're going to bring in one of my favorite baseball authors and historians, Galen White. And Galen has joined us several times on the show, joining us once again today. Galen, thank you for the time. I really appreciate it.
Good to talk with you, Jordan.
Galen, you and I have talked about multiple avenues of your work. The last time we had you on, we talked about Stuck on Base in the Bush Leagues, which is a fantastic book. Today, we're going to rewind the hands of time. We're going to go back a few years to a book that you wrote called The Boco Athletic Club. And one of the things that I found so fascinating about this book, it really puts it in perspective just how great 1956 really was for the game of baseball. Now, of course, this work right here focuses on Steve Bilko and what he managed to accomplish in the Pacific Coast League. All in all, a terrific work. So I have to ask you, why the Bilko Athletic Club? When you decide, okay, this is the project that I'm going to undertake and it's going to take you a long time to complete, what was it about this story that made you say, yes, there's something here?
Truth is, when I started interviewing Steve Bilko and some of the other ball players, I had one book in mind, and that was Left on Base in the Bush Leagues, which, of course, is my latest book. But as my research accumulated, I realized I had more than one book. And so I took the Bilko material and broke it out into the Bilko Athletic Club. And the reason for that was that the 1956 Los Angeles Angels team, which earned the nickname the Bilko Athletic Club, deserved a book to itself because many consider it to be the last great minor league team. A few years later, you had expansion come in, and the minor leagues, while there were still some very good teams in the minors, and the Salt Lake City Beads had some good ones as well, they weren't as good as they were before expansion.
Well, let's talk about Steve Bilko. And again, you mentioned the year 1956. I guess most baseball fans will remember 56 because of Mickey Mantle, right? But if you go to the Pacific Coast League, something spectacular was happening with Steve Bilko as well. In that same year, he wins the PCL's Triple Crown, batting 360, hitting 55 home runs and 164 RBIs, a spectacular year. So you kind of have joint historical seasons going on between two different leagues.
Well, keep in mind, there was no Major League Baseball west of Kansas City. So growing up in Los Angeles, as I did, the closest we had to the majors was the Coast League. Bilko had already played in the majors. In fact, in 1953, he had hit 21 home runs for the St. Louis Cardinals. That was his rookie year. And then he came out to L.A. in 55. By 56, he was the biggest thing in L.A. In fact, his manager, Bob Sheffing, said more people in L.A. Know about Bilko than Marilyn Monroe. Now, that's a pretty tall claim. But that was the way it was in 1956. He was a celebrity. In fact, the television show, there was a television show at that time called You'll Never Get Rich, and it starred Silvers, and the character he played was Sergeant Bilko. Now, some of your younger listeners will remember Steve Martin playing Sergeant Bilko in a movie. The name Bilko in the television series as well as the movie was inspired by Steve Bilko. Phil Silvers once was asked about this, and he said, well, I could have just as well have been Corporal Hodges after Gil Hodges, or Private First Class Musial after Stan Musial. I gave it to a guy who needed it.
So going back and looking over the career of Steve Bilko, again, you mentioned he had played professional baseball, but I think it is most intriguing to me, Galen, that his most successful years as a player came from 55 through 57 when he was in the minors.
Yes, in Los Angeles, he played 3 years for the Coast League Angels. Now, he returned in 1958 to play for the Los Angeles Dodgers, and that's important because the Dodgers were facing a public referendum to get approval to build Dodger Stadium where it's currently located today. There was a great deal of controversy and opposition to their building it in the Chavez Ravine area because it was a historic Hispanic area. So there was a lot of opposition, and the Dodgers needed someone to sort of put them over the top at the polls. So they traded Don Newcomb for Steve Bilko in June of that year, just about a month before the election. And Bilko helped them win that referendum. And Buzzy Pavese, the general manager of the Dodgers, later said that they ought to name a street around Dodger Stadium after Bilko, because in large part he was responsible for their winning that referendum and getting the ballpark and getting permission to build the ballpark there in Chavez Ravine. 1956, the great year for Bilko when he won the Triple Crown, again to show you how popular he was, there was a columnist in L.A. who wrote this: "A vote against Mantle and Bilko is a vote against home, mother, and bottled beer. Mickey is a cinch to get the ballot of every man and woman who can tell the difference between a three-base hit and a crock of cumwats. Bilko, of course, is a cinch to sweep California, and since the vice presidential candidacy seems to be a matter of grave concern and a campaign issue of stirring dimensions, it is comforting to know we have a nominee who is popular with one and all, except possibly the pitchers. Stout Steve is threatened with decapitation while taking a turn at bat." That was from a columnist in L.A., and it speaks to Bilko's popularity on the West Coast. And, of course, Mantle, of course, was popular around the country. That 56, of course, was a presidential year. It was Eisenhower running against Adlai Stevenson. So this particular columnist was recommending Mickey Mantle to top of the ticket and Steve Bilko as vice president.
Again, Galen White, our guest right now, as we talk about one of his books, The Bilko Athletic Club, The Story of the 1956 Los Angeles Angels. Galen, when you sent me the book, you put an underscore of chapter 16, which I found very fascinating, and I want to go back to it. I know you briefly glanced over it just a moment ago, but Bilko getting traded to the Dodgers for Don Newcomb, really, and how important that was for the Dodgers' the Dodgers' run in Los Angeles, because Walter O'Malley and the Dodgers, I mean, that was not a great season for L.A., and Bilko, as you mentioned, did provide a little bit of excitement. I'm always curious as to the stories behind certain players and what they mean to the franchise. For instance, here in the state of Utah, I believe Adrian Dantley played dividends for the Utah Jazz. They may not be in Utah if it wasn't for Adrian Dantley. So when you put that into terms of what Bilko meant to the Dodgers in 1958, you can't overstate it.
Bilko was the most popular athlete in L.A. prior to Sandy Koufax and Don Drysdale in the 60s. You have to go that far into Major League Baseball coming to L.A. The Dodgers came to L.A. in 1958, but nobody really resonated with the fans there until Koufax, of course, in the 60s, and Drysdale. Bilko, up to that point, was the man. He came back to L.A. again in 1961 with the expansion Los Angeles Angels. That was when the American League went from 8 to 10 teams. The first year they played in Wrigley Field. Now, Wrigley Field, yes, Los Angeles had a Wrigley Field, and it was patterned after the one in Chicago. And Bilko was known as a home pro because he hit so many home runs there. He returned in 1961 and hit 20 home runs there at Wrigley Field or for the Angels in 61. And then 62, he went with the Angels and played at what they referred to as Chavez Ravine, but it was the same place, Dodger Stadium. The ballpark was completed by that time. So Bilko actually did play in Dodger Stadium, the ballpark that he helped permission to build. But Bilko was an institution in Los Angeles. People there still remember him. He was inducted into the Baseball Reliquary Shrine of the Eternals in 2015, and there was a folk singer who did a special song on Steve Bilko, and it was the words were at the end. It says, "Angelino Bambino, working class coal miner's son. He was our Babe Ruth, Mickey Mantle, and Ted Williams rolled into one."
It's really phenomenal when you just think about the impact that he actually had. Galen, when you write a book about someone like Steve Bilko, who passed away very young, right, at the age of 49 years old, how difficult is that, knowing that, boy, by the time you get this book published, he's been gone for over 30 years?
When the book came out in 2014, I gave a presentation in the Los Angeles area, and the person who introduced me, a very highly respected baseball person, said, "This is a great book, but it should have been done 20 years earlier." I agreed entirely. I wish it had been done earlier so that more people who saw him play could read the book. But I also said that it would have been a different book. I think I had have a greater perspective now, or when I wrote the book. I had the benefit of more research material. You know, before the internet, everything was through microfilm. Of course, I had interviewed Steve at his home in Nanticoke, Pennsylvania. I spent an entire day with him, so I had the benefit of that. I'd interviewed many of his teammates and guys who played against him. So I had a lot of information already, but I think coming out a little bit later made it a slightly different book. And also, I was able to present it within the context of this great 1956 Angels team, which one of his teammates was one of the all-time great managers, Gene Mock, who managed in the big leagues with the Angels and with the Montreal Expos, the Philadelphia Phillies, an outstanding manager, although he never won a World Series.
Galen, we talk about baseball. It's America's pastime. You know, my thought process, especially here on the show, is there's nothing like high school athletics. I love high school athletics. For whatever reason, I've always been drawn to leagues such as the WNBA. I love minor league baseball as well. I love some of the lesser leagues that don't necessarily get the attention. And anytime I read one of your books, I'm learning something new. It's a history lesson on players that have made an impact that haven't necessarily received their attention. And you got four books that we have talked about: Left on Base in the Bush Leagues, Singles and Smiles. We've talked about Handsome Ransom Jackson, The Accidental Big Leaguer, and now the Bilko Athletic Club. These are books that provide historical context. I mean, really, these are things that played a major impact on the game of baseball. They just don't get the credit when you talk about America's pastime. And that's what I love about your work.
Well, thank you very much. I've always been fascinated with the line, and it's a very fine line, between an outstanding minor league player and a guy who succeeds in the majors. It depends on a lot of different things, not just on their own ability. Steve Bilko was a big man. He was about 6'1". His weight varied anyway between 230 and 270. In today's game, we don't think a whole lot about a big guy, a heavy guy. We've seen guys like Cecil Fielder, Prince Fielder, other guys. But at that time, you know, most of the baseball players were like Ted Williams or Ernie Banks, Henry Aaron. They were slender. Bilko was a big man, so he was constantly under pressure to lose weight. That was one of the issues with him with the Cardinals. They one spring training had him wear a rubber suit so he would lose 30 pounds. And it was, Joe Grosjean said it was almost inhumane what they did to him. Bilko was a power hitter. I was 10 years old in 1956, and to me, he looked like Babe Ruth because he was big. He could hit a ball as far as I heard that Babe Ruth hit him. And I didn't know at the time. I knew, of course, that Babe Ruth was a renowned beer drinker, but so was Bilko. In fact, he had an unusual way of losing weight, and that was he would go into the bathroom, turn up the shower as high as it would go, get it hot like a steam room, and then he'd sit on the side of the tub drinking a six-pack. Now, that was his way of losing weight. But he was a great, a lovable guy. Everybody liked him. And I once asked Jim Brosnan, who was a relief pitcher in the majors, a teammate of Bilko's, also a roommate. And I asked him the very question that you pose, and that is this difference between a minor leaguer and a major leaguer. And he said that Bilko, to him, was like Furton and the Bull. He was not quite sure of himself until he could prove himself to himself. And by not getting the same sort of applause and recognition in the majors that he had in the minors, he couldn't accept himself as a major leaguer. I thought that was an interesting insight. Jim Brosnan, by the way, was known as the professor because he wrote a couple of books on baseball. But Steve Bilko, I think the only thing he lacked was confidence. He had confidence in his own abilities, but he didn't have confidence that the managers he was playing for would stick him in the lineup and let him play day in and day out to prove he belonged in the majors.
Again, Galen White, our guest right now. Galen, it truly is a fascinating story. Again, I did mention some of your other works as well. I think this is a perfect time to give you an opportunity to let the listeners know where they can find more of your work.
Amazon.com is the best place. The publisher is Roman, R-O-W-M-A-N, and Littlefield. You can go on their website, and they may well be offering a special on one or more of the books. After all, we don't have any baseball to watch, so you might as well read about it. And when I write about these books about these players, it's not just about the game. I'm very pleased that several readers have gotten back to me and said that they were not necessarily baseball fans, but they enjoyed the human interest stories, which all the books have quite a bit of human interest in them. The story about Steve Bilko is a great one, and to some degree it's a tragic one because he died young. But I think it speaks also, though, that he was such a great player and a hero to so many people. The columnist Jim Murray, the Los Angeles Times, famous columnist, once described Steve Bilko as an authentic American folk hero, and he really was to a lot of us growing up in the 50s and 60s.
Galen White, again, our guest. Galen, I always look forward to the conversations. Thank you so much for always taking out the time to join us and to share the history and the inside stories of your work and to talk about these figures. It really is always a pleasure, so thank you very much.
Jordan, thank you.
We've got to take a quick commercial break, but we do have more Drive Time Sports coming up when we return. Again, we are live from the Auto Farm Studios on 107.3 FM and 750 AM.